Ezekiel 28, a prophecy against the prince of Tyre, verses 1 to 10. Having described the fall of Tyre under the parable of a shipwreck, the prophet now singles out the Tyrian monarchy for a special condemnation in elaborating the purpose of God with Tyre. At the time the prophecy was given, the king of Tyre was Ithobal II, that is, Ethbaal or Itobaal, but it seems that the king or monarchy is presented as embodying all that the power of Tyre was in God's sight, a rich, proud, godless people. In the time of David and Solomon, Tyre had been very friendly with Israel, supplying her with materials for the construction of the temple. On the basis of, I will bless them that bless thee, this had no doubt resulted in great blessings on the Tyrian people. And there was in those days too an acknowledgement of the God of Israel. But now all this had been forgotten, and the prince of Tyre, in whom was manifest the pride of all the Tyrian people, looking at all the riches and successful commerce of Tyre, became inflated with pride, and feeling secure in his island fortress, said, I am a god, I sit in the seat of God in the midst of the seas. This appears to be a sin to which mankind is particularly prone. There are many examples in Scripture where men blessed by God have, as a result of those very blessings, become filled with pride. Being supplied with everything they need, they have failed to see the need for God at all and have come to sit in their own imaginations in the seat which belongs to God alone. And this was the folly of Nebuchadnezzar, who, fully aware of the teaching of Daniel regarding the influence of Israel's God in the world of politics, yet said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? He had to learn the hard way that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. The people of God were not exempt from this tendency, and so Israel was warned, it shall be when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land to give thee great and goodly cities, houses full of all good things, vineyards and olive trees, beware lest thou forget the Lord. There is a temptation in the world of today for us to be carried away with its self-sufficient humanism. The judgments of God that fell on Tyre, Nebuchadnezzar, and Israel should convince us of the folly of following the world in its proud ways. Daniel had confirmed Nebuchadnezzar's title to the then-known world, and had also spoken of the end of all human government. Ithobal, king of Tyre, had also received a special revelation from Yahweh via Jeremiah, telling him that he would become subject to Nebuchadnezzar, but he chose to disbelieve and rejected the divine message, trusting in his own fleshly strength. And thus, the prince of Tyre considers himself to be, words of verse 3, wiser than Daniel. Verses 6 to 10 cover Yahweh's judgment on the man of Tyre. And because of the prince of Tyre's claim to divinity and because of the pride and arrogance of the nation he represented, God would visit him with judgment. As Jeremiah previously had warned, so now Ezekiel warns that the terrible of the nations would come and destroy the Tyrian monarchy. The terrible of the nations is Nebuchadnezzar, who began the destruction of Tyre, as discussed in the previous chapter. He was but the first wave in a series of invasions that led ultimately to the situation described in chapter 27, here, verse 36 and 26-21, when Tyre would be no more. History has demonstrated the impotence of Tyre and the sovereignty of God. The Tyrian monarchy is no more. It was brought down to the pit. Though the prince of Tyre considered himself secure in the midst of the seas, yet, says God, thou shalt die the deaths of them that are slain. And verse 10 enlarges, thou shalt die the deaths of the uncircumcised by the hand of strangers. The plural deaths is a Hebraism indicating a violent death. Use of the death of Jesus in Isaiah 53, verse 9 in the AV margin. Like Israel, the Phoenicians practiced circumcision as part of their religion, but like Israel, they too were uncircumcised in the heart and would suffer the violence to be meted out to the uncircumcised, that is, or godless nations. Verses 11 to 19 are a lamentation for the king of Tyre, both from a textual and an expository standpoint. This section of Ezekiel is difficult. However, those such as the Jehovah's Witnesses and Seventh-day Adventists who see in this passage support for the idea of a fallen angel, devil, fail to place the lamentation in the context of these prophecies against Tyre and read into it preconceived ideas which are not found in the text, nowhere in the text of whichever version is used. Is there any mention of a fallen angel, a devil, or Satan? Our principal interest in this section is the description of the prince of Tyre as the anointed cherub. First, we offer some brief expository notes on the text. Then we examine the use of the word cherub with reference to the prince of Tyre to demonstrate that its use is consistent with the principles of cherubic activity set out in the beginning of this study. Verses 11 to 15 refer to the creation of Tyre, the conclusion of the prophecy of the first 10 verses was that the prince of Tyre, representative of the people and Tyre, was man. The Hebrew is Adam. Although like Adam and Eve, before him he had aspired to be as... Although like Adam and Eve before him, he had aspired to be as God. The mention of Eden, cherub, and created all combine to give the impression that a connection with the early chapters of Genesis is being developed. So, in verses 11 to 15, the king of Tyre, representative of the nation, is presented as being created by God. And here is the creation of a political man, comparable to the creation of Adam, as the following points demonstrate. He was perfect in beauty, or perfect in thy ways, from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. Compared with Adam, who was very good until he sinned, and the perfection of Tyre lay in its political structure that, as the Hebrew word suggests, was sound and fully developed. He was in Eden, the garden of God, as was Adam, and in the case of the king of Tyre, this statement is expanded to include the mountain of God, which, since there appears to be no connection between Tyre and Sinai, must refer to Zion. The way in which Eden is used in Ezekiel 31, where the nations around Israel are spoken of as trees in Eden, suggests that it is the relationship of Tyre with Israel which is being referred to. The reference to walking up and down in the midst of the stones of fire may have reference to the tribes of Israel, which were represented by the stones of the breastplate of the high priest. An interesting point emerges from verse 13, where the AV has the workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. Fairburn, P. Fairburn, in his book on Ezekiel, points out that the Hebrew word Nekavim, translated pipes, is found only here. And this may be the plural of the word Nekiva, a female, even though it has a masculine ending, Nekavim. If this be accepted, then there is the interesting suggestion that on the day when Tyre was created, there was also created these women who played the tabrets, which should be compared with male and female, created he them. As regards the word Nekiva, a female, having a masculine ending, that is Nekev-im, as a footnote, there are other words that show the same anomaly, for example, Nash-im, which has a masculine ending, although it means women, and Av-ot, which means fathers, but carries a feminine ending. The reference to the anointed cherub that covereth is the final connection with the Genesis record, although there the cherubim are not mentioned by name until after the fall of man. We must now examine the reason why the Prince of Tyre is described as the anointed cherub that covereth. There are two possibilities, both of which appear to be in harmony with the principles of cherubic activity previously set out in section 1. 1. The king of Tyre himself, a cherub, and the verse concerns the king of Tyre as representative of the nation. Tyre was placed in a special position in relation to the nation of Israel, especially in the reigns of David and Solomon. It was a particular note that the king of Tyre participated in the building of the temple in Jerusalem, and in this sense he was upon the holy mountain of God. He walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire, in that he enjoyed an intimate relationship with God's people, who were represented by the gleaming stones on the breastplate of the high priest. And at this time he acknowledged Israel's God, and on the principle that I will bless them that bless thee, Tyre was blessed materially in this rich, powerful nation, placed in this special relationship with Israel and strategically situated on a northern border, was a vehicle through which God manifested himself politically for Israel's good. Thus, in the protection and nurturing of Israel, Tyre performed a cherubic work, a keeping of the way of the tree of life. But it was short-lived. So God, who on the principle of Daniel 4:17 had created Tyre for Israel's benefit, so God brought judgment on her at the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, as detailed in this section of Ezekiel. 2. Rather than the king of Tyre himself being the cherub, a cherub with the king of Tyre. And this is an alternative view that has much to commend it. The wording of verse 14 in the RSV says of the king of Tyre, with an anointed guardian cherub I placed you. Because of Tyre's special relationship with Israel in the days of David and Solomon, the angelo-cherubic, or angels and angelo-cherubic protection afforded to Israel was extended to Tyre. Because Tyre abused this relationship, I cast you as a profane thing from the mountain of God, and the guardian cherub drove you out from the midst of the stones of fire. Verse 16. In this way, we see an example of the angelic overruling of nations for the benefit of Israel, through whom at that time passed the way of the tree of life. Verses 16 to 19 are on the sin and judgment of Tyre. Like Adam, Tyre sinned. Tyre's sin, of course, was political, becoming, as we've seen, lifted up with pride to the extent of grasping after equality with God. I mean, because of Tyre's pride, and particularly because of the king of Tyre's abuse of the special relationship into which he had been brought with Israel, the mountain of God, he would, in the words of the RSV, be cast as a profane thing from the mountain of God, and the guardian cherub would drive him out from the midst of the stones of fire. And this finds its obvious echo in the exclusion of Adam from the garden. Dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return, is the Genesis record. In the Genesis record here, finds its counterpart in, I will cast thee to the ground. Thus Tyre would be politically destroyed, never to rise again, the fulfillment of which has already been considered. Then we have a prophecy against Zidon. The Zidonians were Canaanites, being descended from Zidon, the firstborn son of Canaan. Although in later history, Tyre assumed the supremacy, as here in Ezekiel's prophecies, Zidon was the most ancient of these Phoenician cities. When Israel embarked on the conquest of the land, the Canaanites should have been driven out and Zidon incorporated into the territory of the tribe of Asher. However, the Zidonians were not driven out and the tribe of Asher established a peaceful coexistence with them. And the consequences of Asher's folly had been clearly spelled out prophetically before Israel entered the land. They will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. It's not surprising then to read that the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord and served the gods of Zidon. That's Judges 10. Thus, an evil influence entered God's nation from the Zidonians, who led Israel, especially during the reign of Ahab, to the degrading worship of Ashtaroth and Baal. Footnote here, as it should be noted that Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, the father of Jezebel, was also king of Tyre. He is known to history as Ithabel I. He was priest of the fertility goddess Ashtaroth or Astarte and obtained the throne by murdering King Phelez. Jezebel and Athaliah kept up the family traditions. This prophecy against Zidon should be viewed against this background. The only reference to Zidon harassing Israel is in Judges 11. And we do not read in the historical books of Zidon cooperating with Israel's oppressors. It must be evident that whatever judgment fell on Tyre, as previously considered, would also involve the Zidonians, for the two were so closely connected. But Zidon, associated as she was with the very beginnings of this branch of the Canaanite peoples, is perhaps singled out for special mention because of the way in which those Canaanites had corrupted God's chosen people. By God's judgments upon Zidon, even the worshippers of Baal and Ashtaroth would come to acknowledge Yahweh's supremacy. Regarding the fulfillment, profane history has little to say about Zidon, although a great deal can be inferred from what is recorded about her sister city, Tyre. Zidon suffered with Tyre at the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, as Jeremiah had predicted, and what aspect of Zidon's judgment is indicated in the reference to the pestilence can only be speculation, but disease often follows in the footsteps of war. And after the conquest by Nebuchadnezzar, Zidon was successively subjected to the oppression of Persia, Greece, and Rome. It still existed as a town in the first century AD. Compare that with Acts 12. but gradually faded into oblivion. The settlement of modern Zidon or Saida is thought by most to be of fairly modern origin, being built from the ruins of ancient Zidon on the site of the old city, and thus by the repeated and ultimately final humiliation of Zidon, Yahweh's word was seen to be fulfilled, and in this way he was, verse 22, sanctified in her. The nations round about. The final verses of the chapter are of great importance, for they provide the background to an understanding of the situation which would prevail in Israel at the time of the end, a subject which is considered in great detail by the prophet in chapters 35 to 39. Ezekiel has pronounced Yahweh's judgments on the nations to the east, west, and north of Israel. Now, before he proceeds to give the seven prophecies against Egypt in the south, he pauses to consider briefly certain events which would take place at the time of the end. It becomes clear that although the judgments of God fell on the neighbors of Israel, exactly as outlined by the prophet, the judgments were not exhausted in those historical events that we have considered. The events now briefly brought before our attention have to do with the time when God shall have gathered the house of Israel from the people among whom they are scattered, verse 25. And at this time, as a result of executing judgments upon all those that despise them round about them, Israel comes to dwell safely in the land. We must look then at the situation prevailing in the territories of those ancient neighbours of Israel at the time of Israel's regathering. And a point of great importance is the fact that the words "all of them that are round about them," verse 24, "and all them despise them round about them," verse 26, are words used in Scripture to denote the immediate neighbors of Israel. Here's a footnote. The reference to the Gentile armies in Joel 3, who are described as all the heathen round about, would superficially appear to contradict this. However, at this time the nations are in the land and are therefore correctly described as being around about Israel. Thus, when Israel entered the land after the Exodus, they were commanded, "Ye shall not go after other gods or the gods of the people which are round about you." See also Deuteronomy 6:14 and 13:7, "And with these people they could make no peace. Thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth, but shalt utterly destroy them." That's Deuteronomy 20, verse 16 and 17. In contrast with the nations which are very far off from thee, they could enter into treaties of peace. It's in verses 10 to 15 of Deuteronomy 20. The modern nations occupying the territories of these ancient neighbors of Israel, the people round about, are shown on the map. And working around from the north, we have, I'll describe it, Lebanon, then the Golan Heights, then Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, and the Gaza Strip. Since the declaration of Israel's independence in 1948, these nations, like their counterparts in the days of Ezekiel, have been pricking briars and grieving thorns, verse 24, to the nation of Israel. Memorable victories over these modern Arab nations, Israel has repeatedly asserted her military superiority. The Six-Day War in 67 was the great turning point in Israel's relationship with these nations. And at that time, the governors of Judah were like a hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheaf, and devoured all the people round about, on the right hand and on the left. This is Zechariah 12, verse 6. And Jerusalem became once again the capital city of Israel. And since that time, Israel has negotiated with these nations from a position of strength, and the results are becoming evident. The unthinkable occurred in May 94, when Israel entered into a peace agreement with their arch enemies, the Palestinians, represented by a man who for years had been a thorn in their side, Yasser Arafat. A peace treaty with Jordan quickly followed. Assyria is playing hard to get, but a peace agreement is expected, and this will remove the threat to Israel from her northern, that is, Lebanese border, that is intentionally fomented by the Syrians to needle Israel into concessions with respect to the Golan Heights as a basis for peace. Thus, gradually, as a result of Israel's military superiority, negotiating from this position of strength, the pricking briars and grieving thorns are being removed. And the effect of this on Israel's economy will be dramatic. As an indication of the coming economic boom, it is of interest to note that as a result of the peace process to date, in the 1990s, Israel's GDP increased by over a third, and foreign investment went up from $400 million in 1992 to $2.4 billion in 1996. That's according to Benny Gaon in the Jerusalem Post. The map on the next page illustrates the plans Israel has made in anticipation of the peace accords with the people round about her. And this is an interesting map which shows a proposed pipeline from Irbid to Haifa through the Jezreel Valley. It shows the existing tap line that runs from Saudi Arabia through Jordan and the Golan Heights. It shows the Red Dead Canal, a project to run seawater into the Dead Sea along the Arava Valley and new inland harbours dug in the desert, freeing up the shoreline for hotels, and existing harbours would disappear. And a Red Sea Riviera, taking resorts along the Egyptian, Israeli and Jordanian as a road linking Egypt through Eilat and Aqaba and on to Saudi Arabia. The existing Israeli pipeline will link Eilat with Saudi Arabian Yanbu line through a new branch connection, and new roads from Tel Aviv to Cairo and north of Tel Aviv to Beirut and Damascus and east to Iraq, a new railway line running north to Beirut and south to Cairo, and a new port at Gaza. So this map is really all located in the what is at the present the south of Jordan. By this process, which we must emphasize is founded on ungodly principles, Israel will create an economic miracle and bring into existence the great spoil of chapter 38 that will attract the invasion from the north, which Ezekiel considers in chapter 38. And thus, the settled, prosperous position that Israel is required to occupy prior to the invasion from the north is here being presented to us. This interesting map, by the way, is on page 278 of the book. A comparison of the situation in these verses with that described in chapter 38 is impressive. And now he has a table. On the left, a column, result of removing the pricking briars and grieving thorns. And on the right, the situation prior to the invasion from the north. On the left, then, column, when I have gathered the house of Israel, verse 25, and at verse 12, the people that are gathered out of the nations. On the left, they shall dwell in their land that I have given to my servant Jacob. And on the right, the desolate places that are now inhabited that dwell in the midst of the land. Verse 26, they shall dwell safely. And verse 8, they shall dwell safely. And verse 26, they shall build houses and plant vineyards, and they shall dwell with confidence. And on the right column, which have gotten cattle and goods. Verse 12, them that dwell safely with confidence, authorized virgin margin, all of them dwelling without walls, having neither bars nor gates. Verse 11, and this peace, established on the basis of their own achievements, with very little recognition of the divine hand in their affairs, will turn out to be a false and short-lived peace, and a peace to be shattered by the invasion from the north, described in Ezekiel 38. The only problem in the exposition set out above is the statement that when the pricking briars and grieving thorns have been removed, when Israel dwells safely and prosperously in the land, then they shall know that I am the Lord. This difficulty is easily resolved. The chapter is concerned with the ultimate result of God's judgment of Israel's evil neighbors, not with the Gogian invasion. Israel will come to know Yahweh after the removal of the latter-day pricking briars and grieving thorns. But between the two events must be placed the terrible Gogian humiliation of Israel and her rescue by Messiah. The subject which is treated of elsewhere and which leads to the acknowledgement by Israel that I am the Lord their God from that day and forward. There are two footnotes here. First, regarding verse 24 and 26, then they shall know that I am the Lord. The fact that God is said to be sanctified in them in the sight of the heathen, verse 25, does not imply more than that. God will be seen to be keeping his word by regathering Israel, his witnesses, just as he was sanctified in Zidon when the prophecy about her was fulfilled. And regarding the acknowledgement by Israel that I am the Lord their God from that day and forward, there is an interesting reference in Ezekiel 39 to the fact that they have trespassed against me when they dwelt safely in their land. If this dwelling safely is, as expounded above, the result of making peace with their Arab neighbors, then their trespass could well be the ungodly basis upon which they have sought that peace, that is, their willingness to give up parts of the land covenanted to Abraham in return for material prosperity. And for further comment, on this time when Israel dwells safely, see the exposition at Ezekiel chapter 38.